Hello, and welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org. And with me, I have my very special guest, Stephanie Bailey, former member of The Message from New Zealand. Stephanie, it's good to have you and to talk about all things message related and how I'm very curious to talk about some of the differences between what I grew up in and the main sect and what was going on in New Zealand. So I'm very excited to have you on and talk through that. Maybe if you could start by just telling everybody a little bit about yourself.
Hi, John. It's very good to be here today. So I'm Stephanie. I grew up in Taranaki, a little place called New Plymouth, with my parents. I have always been in The Message, but my grandparents, my dad's parents, actually helped start the first church in New Plymouth. I don't really know too much of the history around who started what in other parts of New Zealand, but yeah, my paternal grandparents, they helped start the church up in New Plymouth that I grew up in.
Awesome. So your family is message royalty from New Zealand, families who helped start the church. Everybody knows them. Everybody recognizes them. In many ways, you're similar to me, but in New Zealand.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I would say that everyone knows the Taranaki Church and everyone knows my parents and the pastors there. So, yeah. I would say it's royalty.
I can imagine. Everybody recognizes you. So tell me a little bit about what it was like growing up in New Plymouth in The Message.
It was very interesting. We didn't go to school for too long, like public school. We were homeschooled. I think I went to three years of primary school and then I was homeschooled. So it was always very much like the weird kid. We had long skirts, long hair, all of that sort of stuff. We weren't allowed to cut our hair, no earrings. So we were definitely like the weird kids growing up, even in school in the winter, turn up in long skirts, usually wouldn't even wear stockings to school. Church, Wednesday, Sunday, then potentially on a Sunday evening, every now and then we'd have communion and foot washing. I assume that's normal, communion and foot washing for everybody that grew up in The Message. But yeah, I don't really remember too much. I just always really remember being that weird kid, and mum and dad were pretty into it. They still very much are. None of us kids are still there, but yeah, it was. I feel like it was okay when we were little kids, but then once we got into our rebellious phase, questioned everything, then it started becoming like real difficult, and that's when mum and dad, you know, fought back with us. And yeah, it's always the weird kid. I don't know. That's how I felt growing up. And I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And we were always compared to Exclusive Brethren as well. I think I've heard you guys talk about them quite a bit on the podcast. We had a bunch of Exclusive Brethren live up the road from us, actually. And everyone would be like, oh, are you just like one of them? And we were like, no, we're non-denominational. And I don't even know what that means, the kid. But yeah, message books everywhere in the house. My mum and dad, they had at least three or four shelves just full of transcripted message books from Brother Branham's church. That was a big one growing up. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but have you ever heard of the Family Altar book that was written by Cloverdale?
No.
It was like a 365-day book, and somebody, I can't remember who wrote it, but it was written by a Cloverdale Bible Way, and they did like they took something or a scripture from the Bible, and then they matched it to whatever William Branham said. And mum and dad would sit at the breakfast table every morning and read one a day from us. So that was very, very interesting.
Yeah, those message books were everywhere for me growing up. Both grandparents on both sides of my family had them. One of my grandfathers had this big special cabinet that was completely specially made to hold these books, and then it had little slots for cassette tapes, and on the doors as they would open, it would be pictures of William Branham and an eagle and all kinds of message relic stuff. It kind of reminded you if you went to an altar by some I don't know, somebody who does like dead family worship, maybe in Mexico or some of those different sects. This was the shrine that they went to and got their message books. And I read through those constantly and I listened to the recordings constantly. So I was like you, I was a little bit different too. I did go to public school, but you know, you're trained to isolate yourself. So even though I was there, I wasn't really there, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it's very hard to relate to the kids in your classrooms because you're so different and you have all these weird thoughts and they're excited about Santa Claus and you're like, Santa's not real. It's a made-up holiday. Even though we celebrated Christmas, I know a lot of people in the church didn't. Specifically, the ones who came from South Africa, I don't know why. I think that some of them do now, but you're talking about that eagle picture. I think we had one of those in our house. We definitely, the picture of Jesus, everyone has that picture of Jesus in their house. There definitely was the eagle at church. I think there might have even been a picture of William Branham at church as well. And I know that there used to be, in the pastor's office, there was like probably every book that they had, the Revelations books, I can't remember what they were called. And his life story, I read those numerous times. They always fascinated me. And I just remember when I first started listening to your podcast and I was like, oh my God, like none of this is true. I already had my suspicions that it was, you know, a cult. But then when I started listening and you guys put up this evidence, and I was like, wow, that like really makes so much sense to like everything. And yeah, I don't know. It was actually insane to hear about it because I'd grown up obviously thinking, even though I left the church so long ago, I never really put two and two together. I just thought, he's probably not a bad person. Everyone at church is just a bit extreme. But yeah, and then I kind of delved into it and I was like, I grew up in a cult. I never really thought it would be anything like Jehovah's Witness or Exclusive Brethren, but it really is. It is one of a kind and everybody is, they all isolate themselves. I don't really feel like a lot of them have friends outside church. You do have the odd people that are very much out in the community and are actually not so strict, but it is so interesting, like when you actually become an adult and you really think about these things and you're like, oh, I really did grow up in a cult.
Yeah. It's kind of painful looking backwards because, so you mentioned Christmas, your family celebrated, well, many families didn't. The interesting part about this is most of the quote unquote cult royalty families, most of them celebrated Christmas because when you become, I don't know why the difference is, but when you become in this royalty status, the royalty knows the other royalty and they know that William Branham celebrated Christmas in his house. But in his public stage persona, he denounced anybody who celebrated Christmas. So the rank and file member who didn't realize that he had a Christmas tree in his home, he had presents in his home, gifts, the church would give him gifts. He even mentioned this on recording. He mentions all of this on recording, actually, if you go look at it. So while he's touring and he's just criticizing anybody who celebrates Christmas like they're inviting demons in their house, he's doing it. And all of his inner circle knew that he was doing it. So the cult royalty does this. The cult royalty also were aware that he had a television in his home while he was just blasting everybody who had TVs, right? So you grow up in this double standard. If you're in the cult royalty, you get to do things that nobody else could. There were large periods of my life where we had TV and then we didn't. It would kind of flip-flop for whatever reason. And there were segments of time where I had it. And I remember those movies or TV shows, whatever they were, where it's portraying a child who's in high school who is isolating himself and is very in a destructive state of mind, and then something bad happens because he has a mental health issue. He's isolated himself. And I never really stopped to think, wait a minute, I'm doing the same exact thing.
I have never heard anyone say in our church that Christmas, like that William Branham did Christmas, or he didn't do Christmas. They never it was never really, I think, because maybe my grandparents were Pentecostals before that, and then my grandma was Catholic. They kind of did it, so I think it was just always a thing. But I don't know. I can't remember if the pastor did it or didn't celebrate it, but I know that he had a TV, which was very interesting. He always had to have like quite flash, interesting things. But his kids and his wife never had flash things. He invested in himself and what he wanted to do, but he would never invest in like that sort of stuff. So I remember like going to their house and they had a TV, and I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Like, we don't have a TV. But we're not, now that I'm older, my parents have a TV, but it's not connected up to, the channels. It's purely there for them to watch videos from other people's churches. They watch a lot of I don't know, the big names. They often sit down and listen to a William Branham sermon at night, just every night, actually. So yeah, they have a TV now, but they'll watch the Rugby World Cup, interestingly enough. Which is a big thing in New Zealand. But when we were growing up, like movies, like no, absolutely not. But I mean, my nana and my papa had a TV, the ones that helped start the whole church. We were allowed to watch like Rugrats occasionally, although my parents were not a fan of that. But because they're at my nana's, like they were just like, oh, it's okay. So my nana and papa like were really strict. But funnily enough, my nana, who helped set up the church, she actually left the church. And I never found out before she died if she didn't believe in William Branham anymore. But I think she was going through, she didn't think that people were in there for the right reasons. And she just felt like it was an evil place, I think, at the end, from what I remember. But it would kind of be interesting to know, because I was listening to one of your podcasts the other day, and you were talking about, was it Lee Vale? And a bunch of other ministers at kind of at the end, like realized that maybe William Branham was a fraud and all that sort of like wasn't that real. I kind of then it made me think like maybe like she was also on that same sort of spectrum as them. So yeah, be nice to know, but obviously can't talk to her anymore. So yeah, interesting that she was like part of the startup, and now she and then she like left the church and no one could get her to go back. My auntie couldn't get her to go back. My dad couldn't get her to go back. No one could. But she was always like, I will stay home, I will read my Bible and pray every day. And that was what she did.
Yeah, it's interesting the timeline because it was about, I want to say it was the mid 1980s. Somebody realized that William Branham, in one of his sermons, he says that he was in Houston, Texas, and somebody recognized that the date he's talking about, if he was in Houston, Texas, he could not have been under the 1963 mystery cloud. And so suddenly, this opened up a can of worms that spread throughout the globe in the message circles, especially among the cult royalty. Everybody's like, well, wait, how do we explain this? If he's in Houston, he can't be in Arizona. And he says, I was standing right under this, holding up the, what was it, Science Magazine or Life Magazine article about the cloud. And so if he's in Houston, he had to have been lying. How do we explain this? And so Rebecca Branham Smith published that, I think it's called The Road to Sunset, and created a timeline to try to reconcile. And that was published and distributed around the globe. Everybody's like, oh, well, there's a timeline. Now we understand it. But then other people started looking at her timeline and, wait a minute, that doesn't match what William Branham said at all. And this just kind of cascaded throughout the globe. And I really think that that's what started the ball rolling. Many leaders of the message had to come to terms with, he was really lying about being there. He wasn't there. What do I do with this? And there were a handful that said, okay, he wasn't there. He made a mistake and openly admitted this, but I still believe the message. He just wasn't truthful in this one aspect. And the others, they just kind of, like, they concealed it. They knew that it was a problem. They knew that he was lying. And they said, okay, we have to keep this secret. We can't let the general public and the message know, because everybody's going to leave. If you take the cloud away, you've really taken away the message, because everything that was built on top of that is the spiritual, supernatural sign. Everything that he said that was built on top of that comes down with it.
I mean, maybe I'm too young for this, but I don't even know if any of that reached like our small town, and it probably did. But I mean, if it did, I would have said that they would have kept that hidden because they don't want people knowing that sort of stuff. They need people to like be in the church. But so like, I mean, I would have never heard of that. I don't know. My parents had never talked about it. I think my parents would be completely lost if they realized that they were in a cult. They wouldn't know where to turn, which is really, really sad. But they really just, they think this man is the one. And it's absolutely crazy.
You know, that's a good point. There are people who recognize they're in a cult while they're in it. And what do you do with this? Your whole life is built on top of it. All of your friends, all of your network, your people, as humans, we need a network of support. And some people, if you cut off that network of support, they really can't survive mentally, sometimes physically, they can't survive. And I'm certain, well, actually, I know because I've talked to people who have gone through this. I know that there are people who make a conscious decision that, okay, everything that I believe is false. However, the man used the word Jesus Christ in some of his sermons. Interestingly, not all of his sermons. That's kind of a funny thing. But the man used the name Jesus Christ. So I'm just going to ignore all of the fiction and just focus on Jesus. And what's interesting is the people who make a conscious decision to leave, they do the same thing. But the moment you say, I no longer believe William Branham in the things that he said that he lied about, I no longer believe the lies, they're instantly cut off from the cult. And many times they're shunned. Sometimes they're just emotionally shunned. The family unit's not the same. But there are people who are inside who are doing the same exact thing, and not everybody recognizes that.
I haven't personally said to anybody that I don't. Well, maybe I have my parents. I can't remember, but I definitely haven't said anything to anybody who's inside the church. My parents definitely, there is favoritism. You can see my parents, so there's five of us, my two older brothers, they are both still in the church. And you can see the favoritism towards them. They adore them. My sister, my older sister, so me, oh, there's three of us, three girls. We are both in the church. But my older sister, not long ago, she had a bit of a mental breakdown. She was like having a full-on panic attack and she just couldn't get out of it. And she must have like rung dad or something. And he like prayed for her. And she was like, oh, my name this worked. And she was like, okay. And then he was like sending her, like, he was telling her, like, talking to her heaps and like telling her like about the Bible and this sort of stuff. And it went on for about a week, and then she kind of was like, well, actually, I don't really like. And then he stopped talking to her. And yeah, it's just so, and like you can just see the favoritism. Like my brothers have done some bad stuff. And it's just this whole attitude of like forgive and forget and like move on. And it's like, okay, but in the real world, it wouldn't really be like that. And a lot of like a lot of the church have are also the same. They've all like they'll take people's side because you know they've gone up in front of the whole church and they've admitted what they've done and they prayed for God forgiveness and everyone prays for them. And like, I mean, I'm not in the church anymore. I'm not even, I don't go to church at all. Like I'm not into that sort of thing anymore. But I found that that was really big within like that community of there was no really like punishment for anything. And boys always held to like a higher level. So they were always like, okay, you've been forgiven, like that's fine. And so I just, and even like our pastor at the time, so was like, don't, he was like, sweep under the rug. He swept everything under the rug. There was no consequences for everything. Even if there was sexual assault in the church, just swept under the rug. It was pretty bad. He's actually not in charge anymore. But yeah, there are some pretty interesting things that happened like in that church. I mean, maybe I'm just going to go on a tangent about them, but we had this one Sunday school teacher. He made us read a message book every week. We had to read a message book, and then he would pick out a couple people in the class to like report on what they'd read. I got kicked out because I wouldn't read them. I was like, no. I was also like 12 to 14, so you can imagine. I'm not really interested at that age. And I'm not going to read them. But instead of encouraging someone to sit in and maybe even just hearing about it might encourage them, I was like, no, see you later. So I didn't actually go back to Sunday school after that. I think I was like, I was anywhere from 12 to 13, but I do remember I cut my hair when I was 12. And this same guy, I went to Sunday school that day and he saw it and he was like, that day in church, his whole sermon was about Jezebels.
Wow.
And I was like, this is about me. And I actually was kind of laughing. Well, like not like on the inside. Because I was like, this is so interesting. I was like, I know this is pointed at me. And I just did not care. I was like, I've cut my hair, not a big deal. We used to tell mum to cut her hair because she'd split ends and it wasn't looking so healthy. She's like, no. And at that point, we'd found out that William Branham's wife and kid used to cut their hair. I was like, well, they did it. And she was like, no, but it's just not right. And I'm just like, he did it, so why can't you do it? Like, it's not a double standard. Like, you're following what he did. So, I mean, yeah, maybe he preached against it but he would also let his wife and his kid do what he was preaching against.
It's kind of funny because I grew up with all of these personal photographs of William Branham. Now, I think a lot of the message people have them, which is even more interesting if you really stop and think about it. But I grew up having them because my grandparents were really close to William Branham. My aunts and uncles played with William Branham's sons and daughters. And so that we have all these family photos, right? And you're right. Meta Branham cut her hair, as did most Pentecostals of that era. They did believe that you had to have long hair. And they had these little debates on what does long mean. If you look at the world today, and you, or well, that era, and you look at, they had what they what they call bobbed hair. And this did not originate with William Branham, but it was about to shoulder length or so. Well, anything below this was long hair compared to the rest of the popular fashion of the era. So you had Pentecostal women who had hair that was just slightly longer than shoulder length, some longer than that. And there are photographs that exist of the Branham family wearing everything that would be condemned by the modern message church. Everything. They had skirts that were above the knees. And I can't tell you how many sermons that I've heard about these quote unquote scandal skirts. Because if you show your kneecap, that's going to turn a guy on. That's going to really mess. And it's going to be your fault, sister, because you showed him your kneecap. And I
Very
was
funny
growing up.
story.
I'm sitting there. I'm a adolescent male listening to this, thinking, I'm not that really impressed with the kneecaps, nor the feet, nor the sandals, all of the things they preached at. I'm like, that preacher's just a little bit weird, And I'm listening to this, and I've seen the photographs. I know that the Branham family had, the Branham family boys wore shorts, and that's in the photograph. In fact, for the visual audience, for those who are watching instead of listening, I'll throw up a photograph, and you can see the shoulders, you could see some of the shoulders in some of the pictures. You could see the knees. You can see that the hair has clearly been cut of the women, and the boys are wearing shorts. And there's even a photograph of William Branham himself wearing shorts. So what you saw off stage by all of the people who are in the inner circle did not match what he said on stage. And that's what created this double standard.
Yeah, my funny story about the whole skirt thing. My auntie, she lives also lives in Perth now. She actually one of the main reasons she moved here was because of the pastor at the time. But she was wearing a skirt that had slits in the ankle, probably like that much. It was really a small amount, like it wasn't nothing crazy. But apparently, you can see her ankles. And the pastor at the time, like pulled her up on about it, and I think he pulled her up twice on it. And was like, you can't wear that. Like, you can't have your ankles out. Men will get turned on by that. And she was like, absolutely not. Like, that is ridiculous. If men are going to get turned on by that, that's their problem. Like, not my problem. They have a problem. She is very headstrong. She's still in the message to this day, but she will tell. She told him, like, him what's up. She was like, I'm not changing. Like, I'm wearing a very modest skirt. An ankle slip is not a big deal. Like, yeah, but I mean, This, like in the modern church that my parents are still in, it's very different to how I grew up. A lot of the girls definitely dress a bit more trendy. I mean, I dressed so ugly. A lot of the girls dressed very ugly back in the day, but very trendy. The pastor's daughter herself, she has her nails done, she wears jewelry, she gets her hair dyed, does her like tints her eyebrows or whatever, everything that we were not allowed to do. And I was like, when I saw her, because she's on Instagram and I follow her, and I'm like, what the actual hell? Like, we were never allowed to do any of that. No one was allowed to do anything. Like, it was a scandal when the old pastor's daughter turned up at church pregnant at 16. Like, it was a mess. But I mean, to be honest, she's still in the church, and the other pastor, his four kids, they all left. None of them are in the church. His wife divorced him. Which is funny because William Branham talks about divorce, and is it the men can remarry and women can't remarry? Is that how it goes?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so he actually got remarried, the pastor of the church. He actually got kicked out of being pastor because his wife left him and divorced him. They said, no, you can't be a pastor anymore. But he got remarried a couple of years after that to some lady who was the pastor of another small church in a town over. And a lot of people didn't go to the wedding, but not for the reason that you think. You would think that people didn't go to the wedding because he was married previously and he's the pastor. People, no, they didn't go to the wedding because she had been engaged previously to some guy who broke up with her because I think because he was Indian and she wasn't Indian, something like that. And his parents wanted her to be Indian. But yeah, a lot of people didn't go because of that factor, which I thought was very hypocritical, but very unsurprising for message people. I mean, he can remarry, but she can't, even though she was engaged, because she wasn't actually technically married, but they say that engaged is married in God's eyes. So yeah, it was absolutely wild to me when, because my mum was really good friends with that lady. They're not so good friends anymore. She's very upset that mum didn't go to her wedding. And I was like, it's not a big deal, mum. Like, maybe you don't agree with what she's doing, but at the end of the day, you're willing to lose a friendship over that. You don't have to like what everybody does. You don't have to agree with what everybody does. But they're still in the church. They're still great people. Well, the pastor isn't, but his wife is. She's very nice. Like, why would you? I don't know. Why would you risk your friendship for that? But they're so set in their ways when it comes to certain things that they will not bend on that. And it shocked me when I found out that that was actually the reason why people didn't go.
So here's the interesting part about the marriage and divorce doctrine of the man can marry, but the woman cannot after they have been married to another person. Not many people know this, but the original message community, up until I can't remember what year it changed, but from William Branham's stage persona during Latter Rain, probably from the 1940s or so, up until long after he died. No people who were married could ever marry another person while their spouse was still living, because that was general Pentecostal doctrine. But what happened was William Branham's son, who was there's a lot I could say about the things he was doing, but I'll just limit it to this. William Branham's son married another woman, got engaged to be married to another woman, actually went through the marriage, and the rumor is that he also had a child, which the records are kind of sealed. I can't go in and verify that, but I have heard that existed as a problem. He filed for divorce, or she did, I can't remember. One of the two filed for divorce. If you go to my website, you can look up in Billy Paul Branham, you can actually see the government documents. Filed for divorce, they separated, and William Branham is presented with a problem because Billy Paul is still dating other girls. And so William Branham he blows his stack. He's so angry. And he tells all of his following that I annulled their marriage and therefore they separated. But that's not what happened. It's an actual divorce. And you can see the court documents. There was an actual divorce. I have actually spoken to his first wife, Billy Paul's first wife. And we've actually had quite a few conversations. And yeah, they were married. There was a lot more to that story than I can even tell right now. But William Branham gets pissed and he starts just railing against the problems that exist today and the fact that men are so constrained. And he preaches the sermon Marriage and Divorce, and he says we have one male deer and many female deers. We have one cow and many female cows. One bull and many female cows. He goes through all the animal kingdom, and he basically says that men are like raging bulls, and they need lots of women. He's saying this in the sermon, and he says awful, hideous things like women are designed solely for the purpose of sex, and it wasn't so from the beginning. Satan designed them this way, and therefore the men should be able to have as many women as they want, but one at a time. That's essentially what he said. But he said, this is only for my church. Don't let this recording out. And so only the people who were localized to hear that sermon, and they're all being recorded, like everything the man said was recorded, only the people that were sitting there got to hear it because they withheld the tape. And then there came to be this battle, which Charles and I are actually, we just recorded yesterday how that tape got released and why. So we'll get into that. It'll come out probably, I think it comes out before this one comes out. But we talk about why Marriage and Divorce got released to the public. That's what created the doctrine of he can remarry, but she can't. Interestingly, at the same time it did that, because of the way he tried to defend this nonsense, it also introduced polygamy into the message, and that spread around the globe. There were many, many ministers who, even in the States where it is not legal, they were practicing polygamy. Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
I'm actually excited to listen to the episode of how Marriage and Divorce came out, because it's one of the ones I mean, I don't really remember exactly what was preached, but I remember hearing about it a lot. We definitely listened to it a lot. It was played a lot. I don't know why. There's a very misogynistic sort of presence, obviously, in the message. And so that was definitely one that I heard a lot. Kind of just sounds like he hated women. I don't know why, like, you would go on a tangent like that if you didn't have some sort of hate against women. It sounds like maybe he could not, if it was Billy Paul's wife that proceeded with a divorce, maybe he just, like, wasn't happy about that. But, yeah, I didn't realise that it came about because of Billy Paul, but it doesn't surprise me that he just made that up out of something that happened, because, yeah, it was always a big thing. I do remember there was a divorced lady in our church and another divorced male in our church. I think they were spending a bit of time together. Don't really know what happened, but they eventually were told that they had to stop, which is ironic because they're told to stop by the same man who ended up remarrying. So, you know, it makes absolutely no sense. I don't know if it was probably because she was actually divorced, but her ex-husband ended up coming to our church and with his new wife and their daughter. All was fine. I think she threatened not to come to church. I think actually they walked in one day and she walked out, and then I think her daughters walked out as well because they were like, no. But I think they still go to the church. I'm not really sure, but yeah, it was so many like random marriage and divorces that like accepted, but then they have this whole marriage and divorce sermon, and it's like, is anybody actually following that? Because William Branham said this, and no one's really doing that. So he also demonized interracial marriage. I do remember having a conversation with my mother, and I'm pretty sure she said something about this couple in our church that was interracial, they were married. And I was like, not a big deal. But I don't know if she still sees that view, but.
You know, it's odd because I went to churches all across the nation. Growing up, I went to something like, I lost count, like 13 different schools. But from Arizona to South Carolina and everywhere in between, we went to churches, and then I visited several churches, etc. And what's interesting is whenever somebody got divorced and then they remarried, they were pretty much scorned in the church. They initially were outcast, even though that they would continue to come because they had nowhere else to go. Like we've talked about, it's your entire support group. So they're taking a lot of heat for several years. But what's interesting is there comes a point of time for I haven't put the connection. Maybe it's the ones that pay more tithes. I don't know. But there are certain people that can do it, and then they overcome this, and then they're well respected. They're asked to pray in the church, and all of the scorn just magically disappears, and people forget that they got divorced and remarried. But there are people who overcome this. There are, on the other side, people who are condemned for the rest of their life. It is a branding, and you are branded, male or female, no matter, even William Branham said he can, but she can't. Well, there were men who were scorned because of this, right? In fact, one of my best friends, this was the case. It created a problem for him, but all of that existed. What we didn't know at the time is before William Branham preached marriage and divorce, he clearly stated that neither one could remarry after they had one spouse. But yet at the same time, in the same court that had the documents that I got with Billy Paul, William Branham is helping perform the marriages of his brothers multiple times. Some of his brothers that I know were well respected and came to the Branham Tabernacle. So he's helping them trade women like baseball teams trade baseball players.
Yeah, I listened to the episode recently where you talked about it, and I was like, huh. I was like, I bet you a lot of people in the church do not know that. Nor would they want to know that, because then they'd be like, oh, they're getting remarried? And he was remarrying them, and yeah, they don't want to know that. But yeah, no, I thought that was so interesting. I mean, he goes back on what he does, everything. He says something and then he does a different thing. So it's not really surprising. But it's shocking when you hear it for the first time.
So you have an interesting history, and I'm curious what it's like in the other side of the globe whenever somebody decides to leave the message. What was it like for you when you left the message? What made you decide to leave? How did it happen when you left? And what were the after effects?
So I think it kind of started. I never really believed in this whole thing. I think when I started hanging out with a lot of Christians in the homeschooling group that were actually denominational Christians, and they could wear pants and do whatever they want, and then I really wanted to go to high school. I wanted to be like every other kid, and I got like the first pair of jeans when I was 12, and mum threw a fit. She was like, where the hell did you get those from? Like, what? Like, why do you have those? And it just kept on going, like little things. And then I got to high school and I eventually was just doing whatever I wanted. Not whatever I wanted, but I was wearing pants and dressing kind of how within what I wanted. But I think I was still going to church when I started high school. So I was like 14. I didn't really want to go, but I went anyway because I think mum and dad kind of said maybe, but like when you're 16, you can stop going to church. So I was still holding on, still very disinterested, falling asleep in church because they're all just yelling about what you can and can't do. And I was like, cool. So I went to a friend's church, Pentecostal church. I stayed over at her house at night, and we rang my parents in the morning. I was like, "Oh, can I go to church there?" And they were like, "Oh yeah, like whatever, that's fine." And so I just dressed in her clothes, and I was wearing a dress that was above my knees, but I was wearing stockings, and it wasn't a low dress, but like it was not for anyone who can see. It wasn't like a high top like I'm wearing now. And I was wearing a leather jacket over top, and I got home because I was dropped straight off after that. And I walked in, and my dad was like, "Why are you wearing that? You look like a whore." And I was like, "Really? Because I'm still pretty covered." Like, I was like, and all of these things, I was just like, I don't want to go to this church. Like, it's horrible. My dad's talking about trials and tribulations, how Satan's coming down, and he's gonna torture us, but we're not going to die because that's not how it works. And he's in the rapture because he's got his life right. And I'm like, what the hell? And yeah, I think by the time I got to like 15 or 16, I'd stopped going to church. I did go every now and then because I actually had friends still in the church, and people were quite nice. They were happy that I like would come to church, which was nice. But then, because my brother wasn't going to church at that time, there are some issues with my brother there. So we wouldn't be together in the same room, sort of thing. So he wasn't going to that church at the time, so I would still go to that church, and then I stopped going. And I must have been like 16, and I just was kind of like, "I've just had enough of this. Like, I just don't want to go anymore." I would still go to like church camps every now and then. I'd go to like potlucks if it was like outside of church. Everyone was actually quite nice, and I would still talk to many of the people in the church today. I want to say I'm quite lucky that the church is so lovely. They'll talk to you, and they won't even mention like God or the church or anything like that. Some will, some won't. But no one's really like isolated. I would say my parents have isolated me more than other people in the church. Like, I mean, I still had some of the elders in the church come to my 21st birthday. Very happy to come along. I mean, they're like my, I guess I would say, aunties and uncles. The men will give me a hug. But that was obviously a very big no-no, like when I was growing up. But I'm 21 now, like I don't go to church, and so I'm just like, and I've been drinking, so I'm like, "Goodbye, give me a hug." And they will just give you, like, they kind of like to that point where they're just like, it's not really a big deal. So I've been lucky in that respect. I know a lot of people have been like completely shunned. I don't really talk to a lot of people, but I do know that my brother ended up going back to that church where he resides now. And the pastor rang me up, and he was like, "You're welcome back anytime. I just want to let you know that he goes here now." And I was like, "I'm never coming back if he's there." I'm like, "You've got to be crazy to think that I would ever like step foot while he's there." But as I said before, like that's a big part of like why I would never go back, is because they support him even though he's done bad things, because he has asked for God's forgiveness. I don't know if it's he wasn't scorned because he's a male and he got up there and he admitted it, and that he'd prayed and asked God for forgiveness. But yeah, like, and everyone's like, "Oh, he's changed, like, he's not that bad anymore." But it's funny because he was 27 a few years ago, and he was courting a 16-year-old from the church. And I was like, "Yeah, this is not normal." Like, so there's like stuff like that that goes on. And it's not something for me. And when I was a teenager growing up, seeing all of this stuff, you just slowly lose hope, and you're just like, "This is not the life I want to live. I can't do this." And so, yeah, just the more this date, I was like, nah. So I just like slowly stopped going to church and just slept on Sundays instead, as a teenager should sleep. So I'm lucky on the side of people haven't shunned me. Still really close with one of my friend's mums that goes to church, and she is probably has the best outlook on life as a message believer. She's very much into God, she's very much into William Branham, but she very much accepts everybody as they are. And I think that might be because she's a teacher, and so she is she just I don't know she's just a beautiful person, and the most person, the person I respect the most in that church.
It's interesting talking about the lady who's a teacher. I've noticed this too. You have people who are in the cult that really isolate themselves from society. And even if they're in society, they kind of shut their brain off. They don't recognize that there is a world around them. But you have other people, especially like somebody who is forced by their profession to interact with people of other faiths, cultures, beliefs, etc. And you find those are the ones that usually don't shun the people. They're usually open. Yes, this person left a message, but they believe in Jesus Christ. That makes them a Christian. I'm a Christian, therefore we're compatible. That's how a normal human being should see it. But there are many people who isolate themselves. In your church, so you weren't shunned. I'm curious, was there shunning in your church?
Maybe a bit more when the old pastor was in charge. He was definitely big for you have to do right or like don't come back. But the new pastor has been quite welcoming of everybody. He's very much, I think they decided it's very much community and you're welcome if you want to come along. And it's not a big deal if you wear pants and, you know, but do things that we wouldn't do. Yeah, I think that maybe it's like a ploy to, you know, see if the people come back to the church. But yeah, maybe like back in the day there was some shunning, but nowadays, yeah, it's not so much like that. Everyone kind of is still friendly with everybody. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm surprised actually, the lady who's about who's a teacher, I'm surprised that she didn't get shunned because she actually left her husband a couple of years ago. He's still in the church as well. He was quite angry and she just had enough. And she was like, well, if you're not going to get therapy, like, I'm moving out. I don't think that they haven't divorced or anything and she would doesn't want to do that. But yeah, I think it would have been very different under the old pastor's control. I think he would have been very much like, this is like not okay, don't do this. But I mean, my maternal grandmother, she went over and saw this lady and she was like telling her she's not doing the right thing and she should just deal with her husband. And she was like, kindly, no, this is like none of your business. Like, I'm doing what's best for me. And I think that it's, she isn't isolated, whereas like a lot of other people do isolate themselves. I have found that some of the people that haven't grown up in the message, so like some of the elders in the church, they came in like the 70s or 80s, because they're all quite older now. I feel like they've had that life experience, so they're not as strict. But I feel like some of the ones that grew up in it are a little bit more odd, the ones that stay. But I know that a lot of the elders' kids have not stayed in the church. A lot of them are out in the world. And I know one of the elders' sons even came out gay, and people have actually accepted it. No one's has been rude to him or anything. They accepted it as a family. None of this would have existed 15 years ago. I'm trying to think how old I am and when I was back in church. When I was about 15 years ago, none of this would have been okay at all. But yeah, there has been definitely a change. I don't know. People are just nicer, more community based now, which is, it's nice to see a change. I still don't agree with what they believe in and some a lot of the things they do, but it is nice to see community based. So. Yeah, which I don't think a lot of churches, from what I've heard, are.
So what advice would you give to people who have left the message and they're trying to establish their footing in the non-cult world? You've done very well for yourself, and there are others who, you know, after watching this, they want to do well for themselves too. What advice would you give them?
Great question. It definitely took me a long time, and I think that going to school, going to university definitely helped. I think it's just all about like getting out there, meeting lots of different people, because you end up finding who you are and you find like different friends around, you find out like who you are, you know, you get a career that's got nothing to do with the church, and you just live your life. You find out what you like. You find out your hobbies, what you enjoy, which is hard to do because, you grow up in such a stringent environment. But yeah, I think it took me a long time to get to this point. It was definitely socializing, not being so isolated, and just really finding out like who I was as a person. And it takes a really long time when you have been in the cult. I left when I was 16, and I feel probably most at peace now when I'm and now I'm at 27. So, but I did also move away. I moved away from a lot of that, so I don't have a lot. I'm not saying move away, but it is nice to just get out there, meet different people, and just do something different, do something new, find out what you like, find out what you don't like. And yeah, honestly, just be yourself, because you'll find people out there that will actually accept you for who you are, even if you still are a little weird. But you, and you'll and you'll just end up becoming this person, this version of you that you never knew you could be. And I enjoy who I am now. I enjoy my life. I know I was so scared, even probably as a 20-year-old, because I would always remember my dad telling me about the trials and tribulations. And I was like, oh God. Like, I was like, I guess I'm just having a good time now. Like, I'll get back to it. And now I'm like, that's not true. Like, I'm living, I would want to say, a morally right life. And I'm not a bad person. And I am very happy who I am now. So.
Well, that's very good advice. I'm glad that you came on, and thank you for sharing your story with us.
No, thank you. It's actually glad to have this experience.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want to share your story, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.